Hello, welcome to another episode of Papa Bear Hikes.
I always enjoy bringing guests back on because, let's face it, they're interesting. They have great stories, great information to share with all of us. Well, today I had the pleasure of having two return guests on the same episode. I'm really excited to have back on the podcast Sally Psycho and Isaac McShane. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey Martin, good to see your face again and good to hear your voice.
Glad to be back.
Now, Sally, we'll start with you. Last time we had you on, we were talking about bird watching, and we've got a lot of positive feedback. People loved it because it's not something that really gets talked about as much in the outdoor community, but it is something that draws a lot of people to the outdoors. You really can't do much bird watching from your house. You have to get out and enjoy bird watching. So give us a little update. If you had an opportunity since then to get out and do any interesting activities with bird watching since then or over the summer?
Yeah, absolutely. Summertime is generally a little bit tough just because it's warmer outside and the migrational bird activity comes to a halt. You know, they're nesting, they're raising their young. So plus it's just gross outside. So it's a little more challenging to bird during the summertime. But what's cool is sometimes you can catch some rare birds that sort of get lost along the way. So we've been pretty lucky finding some very interesting species that have brought us to some beautiful places up and down the East Coast. It's just a great opportunity to get outside and see cool stuff, even when it's super hot.
Well, then you must be thrilled because now we're in a time of year where the birds are migrating.
So oh, yeah.
This is the time of year to get out and do some bird watching.
Absolutely. You wake up in the morning, you know, the temperature's in the low 40s. You know, you've got, you know, rising sun, you're out in the woods, it's quiet. And then, you know, the birds start moving around and the sound comes up and, you know, this time of year, you have warblers moving through, which are very small. Normally, they're colorful, but this time of year, their plumage gets a little bit drab, so they can be difficult to tell apart. But it's kind of like a treasure hunt because you'll see something small moving through the trees, and you stop, you try to take a photo or get a look through your bins. You know, it's, what was that? You know, does it have an eye ring? Does it have wing bars? Yes, no, maybe it has orange feet or black feet. And all these little details are the difference between maybe a black pole warbler or a prairie warbler. It's challenging, but it's a blast. You know, it's yet another reason to go outside and find something to be grateful for.
All right. And this time of year, you have the added bonus, as you pointed out, the temperatures are more pleasant and you don't have the bugs. You're not dealing with the bugs like you do.
Oh, definitely. One of the best summer memories, Isaac and I went to go look for some kind of rare bird. I don't remember whether it was a gray kingbird, but we were at a place called Fort Fisher, North Carolina. And it was stinking hot. I mean, just gross outside, super humid. And we found our bird, photographed it, and we're dying of heat exhaustion. And I'm like, wait a minute, we have the whole Atlantic Ocean. Let's just jump in the ocean. So we parked the car, dropped our camera bags in the trunk, and just walked out on the sand, fully clothed, straight into the Atlantic and floated in the ocean for about 35 minutes. Best cool off summer summer moment I can ever think of.
Yeah, I experienced a little bit of that this summer on my hike. Nothing like cooling off in some water after you've been hiking and warm temperatures.
Absolutely.
And, you know, people say bugs are part of it. But, you know, I've yet to have anybody say to me, oh, I just love getting out in the hot weather and have bugs swarming around me. I'm waiting for somebody to tell me that's something they enjoy about the outdoors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the worst. Bugs are terrible.
Isaac, last time we spoke, we talked about photography, and some of the comments I got back was like, wow, that, you know, you're not just going out there and taking pictures, but it's almost like an adventure for you. You turn your photography into an adventure. Any updates on what you've been up to? I've seen your pictures, I've been following you, and it's just incredible. They're enjoyable to view. Can you give us an update on some of your activities?
I'm still pushing the envelope, Martin. I think that every picture is worth 1,000 words, and I want my photography to tell a story. I try to capture a moment, and I'm always just pushing the envelope of how I can find new techniques to capture that moment. Anybody can take a picture well exposed in an identification photo that could be in a magazine, but I want the story of why is that animal doing whatever it's doing. It may be eating, maybe a bird is eating a seed, or if Possibly I'm just going to focus on the texture of water. I've been getting more into kind of borderline abstract photography, and I use that word conservatively because as an artist, I'm not a fan of abstract art that doesn't have any sort of subject matter, just paint splattered on a canvas, doesn't inspire or provoke a lot of emotions with me. But if there's some sort of a subject, a flower or some water that's discernible, then I want to tell the, sorry, my dog's barking. Knock it off, guys. I want to tell the story of why is the water the texture that it may be. So I'm trying to just step out of my comfort zone, and I'm always gonna adventure deep into the woods looking for wolves and bears and owls. But it's so easy just to get into macro photography with these iPhone cameras we have now. You always have a high resolution camera in your pocket, and they have long exposure settings that you can soften the water like you would with a real camera on a tripod. So why not take pictures of the pond in my backyard or the leaves? Right now, my mission is to capture the perfect leaf photo in the wind with red and orange leaves, just showing that moment of motion. So crisp background and foreground trees, but then just enough motion blur to give a little bit of mystery. What's the temperature feel like? Maybe somebody can relate to that themselves. I want to capture a moment with my photography.
Yeah, I tried to do more of that this year on my summer adventure than I had in the past. You were an influence or an inspiration to
Sure.
me,
I'm
I
so happy to
suppose.
hear that.
Yeah, I had some nice landscape pictures, but then I took some time to just like take this picture. Like we were going through a meadow with some wildflowers, and I just stopped and said, "All right, let me just get a picture of like this flower." Yeah, and there was a point where we were hiking. We saw a lot of these. They're called fence lizards that were kind of running around back and
Oh,
forth,
yeah.
and. Yeah, and so I took some cool pictures of those, and they seem to get the most feedback or interest when I post them on social media, because it wasn't, these beautiful pictures you get of the horizon or looking over to like, yeah, that's nice, but yeah, sometimes it's just that little bit of a story, like this fence lizard just kind of sitting there, and if I was able to video it, it was actually kind of cool. My son picked up on it. We're sitting there having a snack, and this thing looked like it was doing push-ups, right? And it was called, and he says, "Well, why is it doing that?" You think, I think it's in its defense mode, right? It kind of sees us as a possible predator, so it's trying to look big and strong. And so I ended up getting a picture of it, and it's kind of like in a position. I said, yeah, that's kind of, I'm liking that a lot more than just the pictures of the picture of the lake, the picture of the looking down at the valley. But I've kind of using a different lens mentally when I'm
Yeah,
looking at pictures now.
that's how you have to do it.
I had a similar experience last evening. Isaac and I went out for a hike well after dark. Brought the iPhone with me, of all things, and just want to see how it handled night photography. And it performed astoundingly well. But it was, I love night hiking. That's one of my favorite things ever. I like, hitting up a trail when it's pitch black, letting my eyes adjust, and then realizing that I can, in fact, see in the dark. But to be able to take photos while I'm doing that is like a total game changer, and not have to carry, a big, heavy DSLR, but instead I'm using my iPhone, which is just a snap. It's a lot of fun. On night hiking, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there's a type of fungi that grows on trees. I think there's a slang term for it, maybe foxfire, but it glows in the dark at night. And it's amazing to see. You look in the woods and you see all these glowing tree stumps, and it looks kind of like somebody broke open a glow stick maybe and like smeared it all over the tree. Just wild looking, but it's something you'd never see or even notice unless you're out, 11 o'clock at night walking through the woods.
Well, that's interesting. One of my sons is a, like, you can call him an amateur mycologist, but he has some certifications. So I'm going to
Wow.
talk to him about that.
I think it's
And,
a bioluminescence chemical that emits a bioluminescent energy. And it has to be, from what I understand, it has to be the perfect storm of Temperature, humidity, probably time of year. So when we first saw it, it was just we shined a flashlight on the tree to make sure that it wasn't, somebody dropped their watch in the leaves or something. And sure enough, it was stumps glowing. So we came back the next day and it wasn't. So just that one day was the perfect climate for it. So you never know what you're going to find out there. Every time you
That's
step
right.
in the woods, it's a bit of an adventure.
That's right. And you, Sally, you talked about bringing your iPhone and doing a night hike. I personally love night hiking myself. Yeah, night hiking, if you haven't done it, try it, I tell people. And you see the
Absolutely.
forest different at night.
Let me ask. I have a question for you, Martin, since you have done a good bit of night hiking. Have you experienced the phenomenon of, well, obviously, when you take away one sense, other senses are heightened. So when you can't see as much, you're going to hear more and probably smell more and feel more. So all of your senses are heightened, but we're real early risers. The early bird catches the worm, so we've just kind of been conditioned for trying to be somewhere at sunrise. If we're not somewhere at sunrise, we're probably going to be on the front porch drinking coffee. So a couple mornings ago, it was probably 5 o'clock in the morning or so, and it must have just been something about the time of year, but the woods were loud with what sounded like nuts falling. There's a lot of walnut trees, hickory trees, obviously oak trees around here. Million squirrels makes feeding the birds challenging, but we came up with the theory that possibly the cooler temperatures at nighttime could make more of the nuts fall this time of year. And it was just kind of surreal how loud it was. It was like it was raining nuts in the dark, and then as soon as the sun came up, that layer of sound was gone.
Yeah, I've noticed that, and I've hiked year round, and I've had summer hikes, and I can think of two off the top of my head where I was in a lean-to in the summer, and yeah, I was hearing things at night that my senses just weren't tuned into during the day. Like I said, yeah, hearing the things falling from the trees. Yeah, it wasn't a time of year where nuts might be falling, but the twigs and the branches, maybe there's an animal up there that's. It's kind of hunting around for some food or something, and things start falling on top of the lean-to. And I think that I really believe this is, one sense is dulled, and in this case, it's your sight. Others are heightened.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And when I was a volunteer with the Boy Scouts, it was an annual event. We would take young scouts to the first, that would be one of their first campouts, and we'd go to the scout camp where there was a nice lake. But it was, they felt secure enough because they weren't too far away from everything. But we would do a night hike without flashlights or headlamps. Right. And, it was a well-groomed path, so there wasn't the possibility of somebody getting hurt, falling, or tripping. It was a well-groomed trail, and the kids would all come back to saying that was really awesome, and you'd hear some of the comments, and you just kind of sense that, yeah, they're picking up on the things that they're not when they're doing this during the day. It wasn't the first time they had hiked the trail or been out there. Sometimes these kids have been out in that same area two or three times, but coming back with a different and unique experience, doing it in the dark, doing it without the aid of a flashlight. Because a lot of people don't realize is, your night vision is much better than you think it is.
For sure.
Yeah. And I wouldn't advocate just going out and not having a flashlight or a headlamp at all, because if there's an emergency, of course, you want to be able to use it. If somebody were to get hurt, but you turn it off and just hike, it's amazing. And the way to do this with people, and I learned this, I think it was in the 7th grade, a teacher did this, turned off the lights, close your eyes, turn off the lights, keep them closed for a couple of minutes, for about a minute, and then open them, and you can actually see your eyes will adjust, the pupils will adjust to the point where you can see.
Oh, exactly. It's amazing. And then if you've got the full moon out, I mean, it's almost as bright as it is in the daytime once your eyes have adjusted to all of that ambient light. If you do make the mistake of turning on a flashlight, you'll blind yourself. When you turn it off, you'll have to restart all over again. So we try to use it sparingly.
Well, this year I was very fortunate while we were hiking through the Desolation Wilderness. It was a full moon, clear night for all 3 nights. And, my son and I both talked about it every morning. You didn't need a flashlight. That moon was so bright coming in and the reflection off the lake. When you went into your tent, or if you had to get out of your tent at night, you didn't need a flashlight. It was that bright.
Yeah. Well, I think that that changes hunting patterns of a lot of wildlife that will rely on those extra bright nights to be able to see their prey better, or the prey is going to need to hide out a little bit more. What was it we were reading about the black
Oh, the barn
barn
owl.
owls?
Yeah, that the reason why barn owls are white is to kind of mesmerize their prey. If they were black, they would be indistinguishable. But when they're white, they sit very still. The prey kind of looks at it like, "What are you?" And next thing you know, they've got an owl on their head, essentially. But barn owls are white for a reason. In fact, if they ever hatch and they are like a dark morph, the parent will actually remove it from the nest.
Right, so yeah, that's a survival mechanism, is that to get their prey to look up and say, to catch them off guard long enough to
Yeah,
provide a
exactly.
meal there.
It breathes just a little bit longer, just long enough. So,
Wow, that's interesting. I never knew that. You guys have something new going on. I don't know how new it is, but you brought to my attention a venture you guys are involved in that involves the outdoors and art. Great combination, one of my favorites, because I love art and I'm a big fan of art. Tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing with that.
we are laser engraving everything right now. We're just obsessed with rendering images into engravings on various materials, anything from wood to metal to stone, leather, glass, just about any material. We both are artists with very creative minds that just have that insatiable need to make and to create and produce. And through the technology of laser engravers and a lot of computer software, we can take a photograph that we shot earlier in the day, run it through some programs, and then engrave it on a piece of wood or a piece of steel. I've found that stainless steel takes detail amazingly. Stone is better, kind of more for monochrome images or words. It's just one of those fun ways that you can customize anything that you have. So we're sign makers, and we do a lot of commission work that somebody might just want their name on their belt. But what we really enjoy is the artistic license of composing an image. One of our go-tos will be photography that we've recorded over the years. Say it's a bald eagle. We'll write bald eagle on it in a pretty font, and then the Latin name underneath it. Don't ask me what it is. I haven't committed to memory. And then find a fun little quote about it. Sometimes it'll be a fun fact. Sometimes it'll be something silly. I think we did one with a bear that says, "Known to steal picnic baskets." So just something funny like that. And Sally is a phenomenal painter. She just is gifted in a way that you can't teach that kind of painting. I believe that anybody interested in developing artistic skills can learn the mechanical repetition. Some of the best writers out there I've read will actually type their favorite books from their most inspirational authors out there. Just type them to get the feel for the cadence and the rhythm. But at the same time, some people just have a gift, and Sally has that gift with painting. I think she was painting before she could talk, probably. Although I think she came out talking too, so it
Yeah,
came
that
out
is
hand in
accurate.
hand. But the texture that the laser engrave provides adds another layer to a painting. So Sally can paint anything that you ask. Just because she's that skilled. But if I'll engrave a bird or a fish or a turtle or a bear or a wolf, you name it, she'll paint over it, and it gives it a greater depth than any painting you could see on a canvas. So I'm a woodworker with a long experience of everything from framing to finishing any imaginable wood. So because I like using reclaimed wood, and if I can get some old furniture that I can take apart and repurpose into signs, I have all the tools to do that. But I also, every time I'm walking through the woods, specifically private property where I'm, friends with the owners, I'll keep an eye out for standing dead trees. You've got a lot of red cedar and cherry around here, walnut as well. Plenty of good wood that's just going to rot away. And I mean, there is a place in nature for rotting wood. I mean, a lot of wildlife feeds off of decomposing material, so we don't want to take all of the rotting wood, but a selective few. I can get a lot out of one tree, so I can actually take my chainsaw and cut down a standing dead tree, then run it through my bandsaw, mill it into essentially dimensional lumber, and then run it through my planer until I get the appropriate thickness, sand it a little bit, smooth it, and take or just look like every other tree in the forest, and have this beautiful piece of wood that we can then marry up with our technological software until we produce this finished product that has probably seen 15 different tools, two sets of hands, and a lot of love to create this art out of just a tree in the woods. That's one of my favorite things to do. I think it's just kind of a purist approach, and it also satisfies kind of the trifecta for me of creating art as well as my mechanical inclinations. I like running chainsaws, and the lasers have air compressors and water chillers attached to them. There's a lot of moving parts. But then the third is that technical aspect. I mean, I spend more time than I care to admit on Adobe Illustrator, Photoshop, Lightroom, and then you've got the actual engraving programs themselves. I'm switching back and forth. It's a whole process, and just chipping away at it over time. It's one of those things that if you have mechanical and technical aptitude, it's easy to get a grasp of, but nearly impossible to master. And anybody who says they're a master is full of themselves, because I could spend 80 hours a week working on my laser engraver for the next 100 years and still feel like I'm just scratching the surface of this medium.
Yeah, you're taking something you love. I mean, there is a, I think a deeper interpretation to this, right? Because you love the outdoors, and now you're taking a piece of the outdoors and putting an image on it. Yeah, not trying to get too deep here into it, just but through my eyes or my ears, I'm thinking, wow, this is like pretty cool that, right, here is something you love, and you're putting a an image of something you love onto it. And preserving it.
Yes,
That is so cool.
it is. It sure is. Yeah, I mean, you can really nerd out with it, and say you find an old longleaf pine that's just standing. I can take that down and then engrave a red-cockaded woodpecker that would be on a tree such as the pine that it has been engraved upon. So it's kind of my way of honoring the flora and fauna that means so much to me.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using their permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks. And the picaridin, to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent, they're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible high quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors.
Right. And you know, it's just that you're not out there clear cutting and mass producing things. Right. I mean, you know, so as far as outdoor ethics go, right, you're maybe taking a piece of nature and doing something artistic and interpretive with it. I just think that's awesome. Now you talked about, you know, people never perfect this. And Sally, I'll throw this out at you as the painter, because I have a son that has some talent as a painter. Artists never perfect them. They just don't ever perfect themselves, right? There's always going to be something you're going to see or something you want to do better on your next piece of work.
Oh, you have no idea.
Right? Artists could be their own worst enemies, right?
We are.
Yeah, both of us are, for sure. We definitely have to remind each other from time to time, hey, that looks awesome. Put it down. Don't worry. You know, it's phenomenal. It's a finished piece of work. I know you think it needs to be this way, but it looks great. We have to move on to the next piece. It's no, I don't think I've ever finished a piece of artwork and been, I'm done. This is perfect. I don't think that exists. So it just becomes eventually a matter of, efficiency. You know, I have a certain goal of, you know, a number of paintings I want to put out per week, level of detail. You know, I have to find a place where I am at least satisfied to say, okay, this is lovely. Somebody's going to really enjoy this. And even though I want to put that extra detail on that feather, it's spot on. You know, I'm going to let this one go out. And that's how it goes.
Yeah. I've been accused of just not knowing how to enjoy small successes or successes for the mm-hmm. same reason, right? I'll do something and like the desk I'm working from is something I made from a sewing machine stand that I literally pulled out of a dumpster. Well, I should give my son credit. I sent him in to get it, but hey, I had the pickup truck and help pull it out. And I made a nice desk out of it. And, you know, everybody saw it looks great. And I said, yeah, but I could have done this, or I should have, you know.
Well, the other way to look at that is that it's not a mistake if you learned from it.
Now, I want to share this. We talked about this before we started interviewing, because some of your stuff isn't outdoors pictures. And I think this is worth sharing, because we do want people to go check out your site. We want people to buy some of your goods. Something that caught my eye and Wendy's eye was we saw a frying pan on there, a cast iron frying pan with Let's Cook and a picture of one of my favorite TV characters, Walter White, on it. I just thought that was so cool. Wendy looked at it and started cracking up. She goes, that is so funny. That is so cool.
I don't know where we find time to be TV/movie nerds, but we are. I mean, I guess you gotta recharge the batteries at some point. And so we do all sorts of media related, you know, I made a bunch of Christmas ornaments that were based off of the characters from A Christmas Story. And of course, Christmas Vacation, the Griswolds, and, you know, You'll Shoot Your Eye Out, all that good stuff. And I went down like a Tim Burton hole for Halloween. And then somehow I jumped over to, I guess it makes sense. Tim Burton did a version of Alice in Wonderland, I think. So I got on all the Lewis Carroll artwork from some of those original books. We do like and also books. I've been doing the Edward Abbey, like Monkey Wrench Gang, which does tie into the environmentalist approach to some of my greatest passions. I also have a dry sense of humor. And so I have to be careful with the audience that I'm catering to. There's the mom crab. Mom, if you're listening to this, you know, all the frou-frou Christmas ornaments are going to stay on my public page. But then some of the stuff we kind of withhold from that. And I just have this edgy taste to me that sometimes I might throw a curse word into one of my signs or something a little racy, dry sense of humor. And it's not for everyone, but if you get it, you get it. And I'm glad that it can resonate with you.
When I see what you guys are doing, when I see the art and because I follow you guys on social media, you guys just love life, it seems like. And you're always just enjoying the moment.
Well, everybody should love life. And I know it's not everybody was dealt the same hand cards. It's easier for some than others. And we want to inspire others. We want that love of life to be contagious and to inspire other people to live their best life, to honor that which they care about, to adventure, explore, make mistakes, stop and smell the roses, try something new. Life begins at the edge of your comfort zone. And that doesn't make a lot of sense because, by definition, the comfort zone is comfortable. But is it?
No, definitely not. To kind of compound on that, a good example is, I get all of us, we may not start from the same place, but sometimes it takes getting out, looking around, and just finding your fun, finding your peace where you can. Yesterday we had an opportunity to go hiking someplace up in the mountains. That would have been pretty epic. The only problem is that this time of year is tourist season, so it would have been kind of crowded. We ended up missing out on an opportunity, but still took a really great night hike, in our local area. And it was just as exciting and maybe even more rewarding,
And we went fishing.
And we went fishing too,
Yeah,
It's, these are like normal things. I mean, we weren't doing anything, particularly awesome, yet it felt awesome. It just felt good, to put my foot down into the darkness, not quite know where that, where the gravel ground feedback's going to be, but maybe more precise with my steps. My night senses were heightened. I went fishing yesterday, which was really cool. Apparently bass do bite in October, but it's simple things. It's a little bit about perspective, but honestly, get off the couch, step off your porch, breathe some fresh air, and try to find some solace and peace and fun where you can, But choosing to get up is the first step, and it is literally the most important.
and Sally, I think you and I talked about this when you were on the show the first time. Is that's a big part of what I try to do here, and why I bring guests on from that represent different parts of the outdoors, is that I think there's something we can all find to get us out there.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be through hiking the Appalachian Trail or biking across the country. It could be going to your local park and just looking for animal tracks or identifying trees.
Exactly. Oh, don't even get me started on identifying trees. I found the coolest app that you just hold it up and it will tell you what tree it is. And then I found a whole tree database. It tells you what species of wood it is. I mean, there's just
Wow.
endless opportunities to nerd out on nature things.
Yeah, that's something I've wanted to up my game on is plant and tree identification. Every year I pick a skill I want to sharpen, and I think that 2023, I think tree identification might be the one I try to sharpen up a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should try Google Lens. It works really well. And then there's an app called Seek, which is super useful. You take a photo of the tree or plant in question, and it will give you back a couple of different possibilities where you can take a look at it and match it up. Helps you learn these things a whole lot faster. Now, Isaac has another method of identifying plants. We found this weird plum tree on our property. He's like, I wonder how this tastes. So like he took a bite. Now, thank goodness he didn't swallow because it was freaking nasty. And I'm thinking to myself, these plums are still on the branches. It's late October. The birds and squirrels haven't messed with this, so it's probably not good. But Isaac, he's got to know. And how he learns, he's like, I got to do it. Let's see how this goes. He took a bite and he's like, nope, this is bad.
We had discussed before I was disgusted with this plum how full these trees were. I mean, no, nothing was touching it. So I had a pretty good idea it wasn't going to be the best plum I've ever had. But I am the kind of guy that, tell me the fire's hot. I believe you, but what is hot? I need to know what hot is. So haven't got around yet to IDing toxic plums of North Carolina. I'm going to look it up at some point. Unless there's a delayed effect, I don't think that it got me, but boy, that thing was gross. I'll tell you, I couldn't get the taste out of that.
And maybe I should be a bit impressed that you're going to look for an app now so you can avoid the taste test to see if it's bad. We don't recommend this for those of you at home.
No, definitely not.
Not at all. Yes, that's true.
But yeah, it could be tempting. I know on one of my hikes a couple of years ago, I saw some berries that, and I was like, maybe I'm going to try. It looks like blueberries, but they were so underripe that I ended up spitting them out. Hopefully they were blueberry. I'm still here to, again, like I said, Isaac, I'm still here to talk about it. So obviously they weren't poisonous. I didn't get sick that night or the next morning.
One of my dad's favorite things to do while hiking, especially on crowded trails, he'll find there's a certain species or type of lichen or that grows on rocks, which you can eat and kind of tastes like bland potato chips. So I'm out, maybe hiking in the let's see, I guess like Shenandoah National Park. Up on the higher peaks, there's this particular species that you take a bite, you crunch it, you eat it. It's apparently delicious, but people don't know this. So when you eat this stuff in front of other hikers, you get some looks. Let's just put it that way. And I know it delights my dad every single time, but it's like one of my favorite dad memories is him, eating lichen off rocks in front of other hikers who do not know what to make of this crazy man.
You'd ever say, okay, here, try it. Really, try it. You'll like it.
Absolutely good. I
Yeah.
promise.
Wow. That's great. That's a great story. So if people want to see your art, if they want to, the engraving, you have a website they can go to? And well, that's the first question. Let me ask you that first.
Yeah, so probably the easy thing to do is go to Etsy.com and search Riverside Creations NC. And you can also see some of the work at isaacmcshane.com.
You can also look me up on Facebook. I like making new friends, and sometimes that's the easiest way to get a quick response from me is just send me a message on Facebook. We have a business page, Riverside Creations NC. And if you want to look me up on my personal page as well, that's fine too, which is just Isaac McShane.
If somebody has an image that they want the two of you to put on something, say they have something, they have this picture maybe of them, at their final summit of the Adirondack 46, and they want it to be put on a maybe a piece of wood that they found in the forest. Do they send that to you? How does somebody go about getting a custom piece of work from you?
You got it. That's it. Communication is one of our priorities with this business. So we'll figure out a way to make it work. Whatever the customer feels the most comfortable with. So if they live out of state, then shipping, you can ship us anything, and I'll tell you if it's something that I can engrave or that I cannot engrave. Sometimes if it's something that is a little bit more obscure, I might locate a test piece. I've made mock-up signs to show somebody who's ordering a 6 foot wide sign, but they want to visualize what it looks like. I'll make a little 1 foot scaled version of it to say, okay, well, is this what you have in mind? Make sure that we're 100% on the same page. Especially if it's something that's sentimental to somebody, grandpa's pocket watch or something like that. Wood is pretty easy. If I can match the species, then if it's not a wood that I've already worked with, then I'll just get that same piece of wood and dial it in first and show you, say, this is what it's gonna look like. So yeah, we work with everybody individually and just try to figure out a way to make the customer happy.
All right. So yeah. So if hypothetically speaking, I've got a picture of me sitting with my son and I want to have it put on something. And you have the knowledge in the background to say, well, we'll work on this type of material, or we could put the image on,
Yeah, we often have the materials in stock. Like we have a pretty deep well of cedar wood available, for instance. So, let's say you wanted that particular moment engraved on wood, we would first offer, hey, we've got this beautiful piece of cedar. Let's put it on here. Does that sound good to you? And most people, that's generally what they do, or even glass or maybe a piece of slate or something to that regard. But of course, if people have actual items, they can send it to us as well. But we have a line of different things, from cups, glasses, heck, even kitchen knives, which is pretty cool. You can have a custom engraved knife set, get all stabby in style.
because I think about this, I have patches, and patches are nice, but when you can have something custom. It just starts to tell a story. There, you know, it's not just an image, but there's a story to that image. It's, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, the patch you look at, you say, I hike that trail or I hike those peaks, but to have it engraved on something, I think it just, it's more than an image. It's a story. It starts to become a story.
Certainly. Oh yeah. Well, you mentioned patches. We've been doing leather patches lately that you can put on a hat or a shirt, sleeve,
yeah,
whatever you want. I mean,
backpack, they're just, whatever.
What are they? Four inches wide, 2 inches tall, I think. You know, hat patch size. But you could, you know, say I made it to the top of Pikes Peak on November 2022 or whatever you wanted to say, and have, you know, a picture of you giving the old thumbs up, whatever you could imagine.
So, and it just, it becomes a personal story, though.
It is.
That's the
it
whole
really
idea.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah. I just, you know, I think that's so awesome. Now, as a backpacker, I'm going to ask this in terms of material and personal items. Titanium is very popular among backpackers, especially ultralight backpackers.
Oh, yeah.
Are you able to engrave on titanium items, yeah, like titanium mugs, certainly, and things like that?
It's beautiful. Yes. Yeah, a lot of times we use two different kinds of laser engravers. The big boy is called a CO2 laser engraver, which has about a 4 foot long glass tube in the back of it that shoots a laser around a bunch of mirrors. It's primarily for wood. That's where we're making our wooden signs with. Then the metal, glass, stone. I just got commissioned to make a bird memorial.
Yeah, the bird memorial.
Somebody has a cockatiel that, you know, was their sidekick for over a decade, and unfortunately this bird passed, so they asked me if I could make a memorial on a piece of stone to memorialize the friend. I call it the bird memorial, but I mean, you talk about telling a story, that stone is going to look like that longer than we're alive. I mean, it's not going to weather. It really doesn't engrave the surface. It removes material, makes sheer edges on it. So it's got a very dimensional look to it. The denser the material, the better, though. So that was my long answer that yes, titanium is fair game with the fiber laser.
Because I ask, because, you know, let's face it, a lot of the people listening to this podcast are outdoors people, and maybe they've hiked or biked or kayaked on a trail or a waterway, and they might just say, you know, I got this mug that I had with me the entire time. Can you put something personal on it? You know, like
hike
the Cranberry Lake Trail, you know, 2022, and things like that. Because, you know, we all like those little anchors in our lives, you know, those little visual anchors.
Those are some of the most fun jobs that we can get, is helping somebody to have such an anchor that can just be a beacon of positive energy, a happy memory that they can hold on to. Today, we always try to do a wild card thing. So every morning I make a to-do list, and you know, I'll prioritize any ongoing orders that I need to button up, and then I'll jump on to beginning new orders, whether it's commissioned or just my own ongoing list. Then a lot of times at the end of the day, when you know, I've completed the main stuff, I want to experiment. I want to try something new. So today we tried some clamshells. We noticed these huge, I mean,
like
hand-sized
really big
clamshells down at Jordan Lake. And they're not just, you know, kind of a sun bleached. There's raccoon tracks all over the place. So we got a boy and good over there somewhere. These aren't the sun bleached white ones that, you know, look like they've been there for a year. These are fresh, and they have like a kind of abalone pearlescence about them. So here we are engraving clamshells downstairs just because if somebody says, man, This clam means a lot to me. I want to be able to say confidently, yes, I can engrave that sentimental clam shell for you or whatever. I think the next one we do is going to have, what is it, Quagmire?
Yes.
Quagmire, the Quahog guy, Family Guy, whatever it is. Giggity, giggity, giggity.
That's right.
Isaac, it sounds like if somebody contacted you, it's not likely you're ever going to come right out and say, no, I can't or I won't.
Yeah. If I know I can't, I won't. Right. But
you're at least going to give it some thought. It sounds like you'll look at anything and say, is there a way that this can be done?
Well, that's the thing is I fall asleep thinking about this, wake up thinking about it. And for every hour I have on the laser engraver, which I've got to say, we've only recently begun pushing Riverside Creations aggressively, but this has been just a kind of side project of mine for years now. I actually bought a starter laser, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, and I've been chipping away at making signs for several years now. So I have a good backbone of laser engraving knowledge, and I surpassed the life expectancy of this entry-level laser engraver, which is why we decided to upgrade and kind of get the full gamut of laser engraving abilities. So, I spend a lot of time researching on the back end. For every hour that I have on the engraver, I have 2 hours on laser engraver forums. There's a bunch of Facebook groups that are just the widest spectrum of experience imaginable. You get a lot of people who are in over their head, who do not have a good mechanical or technological sense, and it's just ridiculously overwhelming to them. And then you get people out there who I'm just trying to scratch my head and think, oh my goodness, how in the world are they doing that? You know what? That's incentive for me to want to figure it out. So these are really helpful communities where, you know, I'll normally do a search if I'm trying to figure out something, you know, type in clamshell in the group to see if somebody else has already been down this road. If I can't find the information I'm looking at, you know, sometimes you'll post a question, and people are always very helpful with responses. Likewise, if I see somebody post a question that I feel confident I can help with, you know, it's my way to pay forward to people who don't quite have the experience that I do. So it takes a tremendous amount of both that back-end research, figuring out the ins and outs, and then a lot of wasted materials. I mean, fortunately, not only do I, you know, cut down the occasional standing dead tree, but I just went to the local sawmill that specializes in cedar and got 3,000 pounds of cedar scrap ends from the milling wood. So one side will be really tapered and the other side will be really thick. Not good enough for making a 2x4 out of, but I can cut, you know, the fat end off and get a bunch of signs out of it. So I spent, you know, $30-$40 and I've got hundreds worth of signs that I can pretty easily whip up out of that. And so that's the kind of stuff that if I'm trying a new technique, I'll just take a little bit of scrap wood and go to town. You know, I'm pretty frugal with trying to get every little piece. I'm the guy who's like thinking, now can I glue the sawdust back together and make something out of it, you know? But luck doesn't have a lot to do with these. It's the persistence of dialing in the technical aspect and then troubleshooting and you know, trial and error.
Well, it's like anybody that creates does. You're not going to create anything if you just live in fear of making mistakes.
Yeah. Exactly. No.
That's for sure.
It's well said. Exactly.
Right. If you're afraid to buy that first paint set and try putting something on the canvas, well, it's just never going to happen. So go ahead and do it. And if you make a mistake, it's your interpretation, right? Art is in the eye of the person doing it. You know, it's just, you know, it's, Well, it's like I say about people who want to get out and start hiking or ask me about how to start hiking or backpacking. The first thing you need to do is to just get out and do it.
Yep.
And I think art's the same way.
Oh, yeah. Now, everybody has legs, you know, so you can go to the park and take, you know, baby steps, hiking along, see if you like hiking off road a little bit. You know, most everybody has a phone with a camera, so, you know, you can dip your toe in the water of photography with, you know, whether you have an iPhone 14 Pro or an Android, you know, three generation old one. I mean, there's photographers out there who were using the first generation point and shoot cameras that are getting full spreads on Nat Geo with, you know, a 2 megapixel point and shoot camera. The camera's just the box. It's the photographer that makes the photograph. And not everybody wants to spend, you know, $500 to $5,000 on a laser engraver. So I don't know how much, you know, it's a little bit different in that, you know, you go to Michael's and spend $20 on a paint starter kit. You can't really do that with laser engraving. But I will say this, I don't want to, you know, take away from my business. Come to me if you want things laser engraved. Don't get into it. It's not for you. No, that kind of goes against my whole philosophy. In all reality, before we committed to this particular brand of laser engravers, we found through their website that they offer engraver hosts who have the same style of machines, and you can schedule a 30-minute appointment with them to watch their machine in action, ask them questions. And so even though I'd had several years worth of laser engraving experience, it was a really big jump to get these new pieces of machinery. So, you know, we wanted to just try as much as we can. So I guess my point, if I have one, which I might not, would be that even for something as complex as laser engraving, if that's the art that really piques your interest and sparks your passions, then there's ways to dig a little bit deeper. I mean, I see people on these Facebook groups pretty regularly saying, hey, you know, I'm thinking about making the jump. You guys have any input? And kind of the same thing, you know, if you want to get into hiking, take a hike. If you want to get into laser engraving, find somebody who's got a laser engraver, you know, spend an afternoon asking them questions, see if it's for you.
Well, yeah, and also, you know, I talk about, you know, get out and hike. Well, if somebody's going on a backpacking trip, I wouldn't tell them go out and spend $2,000 on high squat. Yeah. Go find somebody that backpacks and go with them, or borrow some gear. And like you said, somebody that's laser engraving, and you know, they might walk away from the experience saying, just not for me.
Yeah.
Or they might like it and take it the next step.
Yeah. Or maybe hand paint some signs. I mean, yeah. I think that's what got me into laser engraving is I had been making signs with a router. When I worked at a cabin rental company, I just take a router and kind of make some rustic textured signs. And so, take baby steps. You know, don't go do a $2,000 backpacking trip. Don't buy a $2,000 laser engraver. But you know, art is just so subjective that if you find what drives you, you're lucky. And maybe that's my point, is that I think Sally and I are two incredibly blessed people who have found many different hats to wear that we love and that constantly reaffirm that we are living our best lives, that, you know, we don't want to take any of that for granted, that we do consider ourselves to be competent within these endeavors, but yet we also are lifelong learners that strive to pick up new techniques and bits of information every day, forever. And, you know, we're really blessed about that. And I hope that everybody finds such a blessing, because it makes life more worth living.
Sally, Psycho, Isaac, McShane, I want to thank the two of you, my friends, coming on here, sharing this with us. It's always a pleasure talking to you guys, and I look forward to having you on again in the future. I encourage everybody to go check out Riverside Creations and see if Isaac and Sally can take your memory and put it into something, or create something that maybe you want to put in your your office or in your backpack when you're out there, or maybe even a leather patch, as they talked about. Hey guys, thanks so much for coming back on.
It was a joy. We've enjoyed it.
Absolutely wonderful to be on. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
All right, you guys, you have a great night. Everybody, get outside, have some fun, and be
safe.
Thanks
for listening.
If you haven't done so yet, go to our website, papabearhikes.com. Listen to past episodes. Check us out on social media. Go to our YouTube channel, Martin Outside. All those links are there. In addition to that, you can buy our book or see what you're missing out on if you're not a Patreon member yet. Remember to get outside, have fun, and be safe. This episode of Papa Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.